Montgomery's done incredibly well to get up above Cargill and find Bennett. It's into the box. McNulty, cut back for Roberts. It's Gary Roberts for Bobby. Bobby are leading in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Mark McNulty, but a good chance by Doyle. For McNulty on the edge. Mark McNulty, oh, short yes. For Bobby. Smashes it past McCormack. Won by Doyle. Finished by the returning Mark McNulty. First left blood for Bobby. They're in dreamland early here at Fratton.
There's a through ball to Jamal Lowe. Jamal Lowe's onside. The flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Pompey will be promoted at this rate.
That is it. Pompey are champions. They've won League Two in the most dramatic of circumstances.
The PO4 podcast with Hugh Bunce, proud to be Pompey.
Hi Pompey fans, and welcome to PO Forecast episode 221. Well, it's a 3-1 win against Shrewsbury, as Pompey are now one win away from the championship. Join the podcast today is Andy Mitchell. How are you, Andy?
Hi, Ed. That is true. I'm okay, thank you. I cannot quite believe how long ago Saturday seems, to be honest with you. It is only Wednesday night at time of recording. Shrewsbury at home seems like weeks ago. I don't know what's happening to time this week, but yeah, potentially, 72 hours away from the championship, which is madness. I mean, we'll come onto it later on with the Bolton game. I think a point would be a great result, but I would be well on board for a big night in Manchester this weekend if everything goes to plan. How are you doing, Hugh? What's happening with you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Not too much, to be honest. Had a lot of fun at the football. Not done that much. Felt a little bit sniffly, so apologies for my voice being even more slightly West Country sound than normal, which always happens when I'm either drunk or sick. But I'm gonna get better. I'm nearly there, boys. I'm gonna get better for the weekend away in Manchester. And talking about someone who's not coming to Manchester because he's blowing us out to talk about something pointless for the local news, it's Freddie Webb. How are you, Freddie?
How's it going? Yeah, no, I can't go to Bolton because, unfortunately, my job put me in to work the weekend of Bolton away, so I will be in the office on my own. So we'll see how that goes. I'll hopefully have a celebratory bourbon and coke afterwards or something, but I doubt that I'll be celebrating as much as you guys.
One of the more middle-class things. I know I call it out when we say middle-class things.
What's wrong with bourbon?
Bourbon and coke.
What's wrong with bourbon? It's lovely.
I get them mixed up with chocolate biscuits. Bonbons?
There's bourbon biscuits. And bourbon is whiskey.
I get them mixed up.
I love that. JD and Coke is what he means, basically.
JD and Coke, right. I can get on board with a JD and Coke. That's the first thing I ever got drunk off when I was 16. And we went to a pub that is now closed on the Isle of Wight. And my sister's friend was behind the bar because she worked there. And I went and asked for a J2O. And he said, oh, is that a JD and Coke? And I was like, no, J2O. And he was like, no, you're having a JD and Coke. And then he just poured JD and Cokes down me for the night. I got wasted. And then a couple of years later, the pub got closed down because they were watering down their vodka, reportedly. A big shout out to the Countryman out Bryston way that is now Flats, I believe. The classic hangout after cricket games on a Saturday as well. But yeah. Gone but never forgotten, the Countryman. Represent.
Oh, God. Whiskey was also my first alcoholic drink. My dad didn't decide to start me on beer for my 16th birthday. He decided to get me a Double Bells instead. Neat. It took me like ages to drink
Birthday, sorry?
My 16th birthday.
My sister's partner at the time thought he was very funny and gave me a birthday card with a condom in. That was my equivalent. I didn't get bought any whiskey, so... Thankfully, at 16, I was so completely inadequate around women. It was completely unnecessary. I think I had it for about 5 years in my top drawer.
You just lucked into it now, haven't you, Andy? I don't think that anything's changed in particular apart from sheer luck. But
I'm saying nothing. You've both been out with me, so I don't feel like I need to add to that.
You certainly don't. You certainly don't with your depth chart. I'm talking about my first beer I've ever had. Actually, I think my first drink was beer. And then I remember smuggling in a bottle of Armagnac at 13 years old. And shout out, Dad. Sorry, I stole that from your cupboard. I know you listen. So that was my first ever spirit I drank, I think, at 13.
Strong. It was also much more affordable back then. We've got photos from, we used to have, there used to be things called quarry parties on the Isle of Wight that there might actually be listeners who remember, because I think they went on for a few years. They went over a few age brackets. And I got photos of that, and you'd be in this quarry in a place called Freshwater on the Isle of Wight, where there would like be cows walking through the middle of this ridiculously bad outdoor party for 16-year-olds. But I've got like really old photos, and you basically just get wasted off two-litre bottles of Strongbow. And it's got a big price on the side. You could get 2 litres of Strongbow for £2.70. I mean, simpler times, honestly.
Were you one of those person who turned up to university and you went to a party and you still bought big bottles of Strongbow? You know, when everyone's like, bring some booze, and you bought the Strongbow, you put it down on the table, and then you just walked off and picked up someone else's drink and drank that instead?
No, I wasn't actually. I mean, I was somewhere in the middle. I think I was on the Red Stripe vodka and the absolute Lambrini life at the start of uni. But there was a girl in my halls that she's from Frome, Somerset, who just turned up with basically a petrol can of cider to Pries, like proper West Country cider. And then there was the opposite end of the spectrum, the people that had moved down from like the posh home counties. And they brought literally like they were getting drunk off port at Pries in first year of undergrad, which was a bit of a shock to the system for us. So yeah,
that's miles away from my experience. I remember going into flats, house parties where people were using Strongbow dark fruits as the mixer. But I think that was just an aberration, Newcastle aberration, I think.
Honestly, just looking back now, I know I'm getting old, but they were grim drinking days. Like playing, well, we called it King's Cup, but Ring of Fire, whatever you want to call it, where some of the cards were like you had to put a food stuff into the central cup. So we were downing pints of vodka, beer, port, cider, roast chicken and hot chocolate powder. And like ketchup and stuff. What's wrong with us? Why were we doing that?
People who actually just tuned in and don't usually listen to the podcast, we do some poppy content. So let's just let people know what's going on. So first of all, we are going to review the game against Shrewsbury. Following from that, we're going to talk about a little bit in the news, but there's not too much going on apart from the games. And then we spoke to Ben from Trotter Chatter to talk about the big game coming up on Saturday. And finally, we thought, do you know what? We don't usually preview Tuesday games, but it could be a massive game. So we spoke to Alan from Red All Over to preview the game on Tuesday against Barnsley.
You say we don't usually preview Tuesday games. I would just like to point out that I did preview the last Tuesday game when neither of you two bastards were about. I took it on myself.
I know. And you cried about it for ages.
Tuesday games.
That's brilliant. You stepped up, mate. Congratulations.
I had to do 25 minutes of work by myself. It was absolutely outrageous.
Sorry, I wasn't about. I was just, I can't even remember where I was, to be honest.
Oh, I'm glad it was that important to you, Freddie.
Whinging. The listeners appreciated it. I even screenshotted and sent you some of the messages. So I appreciate it when he did that. Let's get started. Let's talk about Shrewsbury. It was not a classic for the ages, boys, was it? Let's be honest. It was not a game where probably necessarily played their best, but at this time of the season, it's all about getting results. And Pompey did exactly that. It started off pretty well, obviously, scoring in the first few minutes. Freddie looked really happy. I saw him just sort of waving his arms in the air. He almost celebrated the fact that Marlon Pack might be taking a long throw into the box, which is obviously one of his favourite things to happen. But instead, he really just gave two fingers up to Freddie Webb and was literally like, nah, I'm not doing that. He was literally just like, played a short ball really to Connor Shaughnessy, who comes for the short play, which I suppose really threw off their defence, not thinking he was the player to come out. He comes short, he whips it in with, I believe, not his strongest foot either, with his left foot straight into the box. It's 2 minutes gone. Bam, bam, we're 1-0 up thanks to an own goal.
I looked brilliant by saying before the game, oh, Shay Junkley, he's a very good player. Yeah, I know there was a bit of pressure from Connor Ogilvie, and the cross from a centre-back outside the penalty area may have changed some things, but no. Brilliant start for Pompey. But then from there, the Blues controlled possession, but didn't really do an awful lot. Pompey didn't have a shot until after going one up until the 43rd minute, and that was the penalty. So that sort of gives away how much of the first half went.
Yeah, and Shrewsbury managed to get one back, didn't they? We're sort of in control of the game. As Freddie said, a lot of possession, not a lot of output, but we still look like we're going to get to half-time, I thought, at the time before they scored. Jordan Shipley was the player who I've always liked the most playing for Shrewsbury. He's a danger man. Looked good for Coventry previously. Just one of those players you look on the team sheet and go, okay, he's a player who can get a goal. And a lot of their players, I'll be honest, I look at and just think, meh. So Jordan Shipley finds space in the box. Before that, I think it was Daniel Udo who sort of comes down the left-hand side, takes players on. He's always been quite quick without very much output. Squares it across the box. It's a lovely layback to find Shipley in quite a lot of space, and it's 1-1.
I was really quite frustrated when that went in for many reasons, but I think mostly because Shrewsbury, and I'd say this with no disrespect, I think they were the worst team at actually being good at football, like basic skills like passing. I think they might have been the worst team I've seen this year. So to concede to make it 1-1, you basically know what the pattern of the game is likely to look like from that point. And it was even more frustrating because it was a really nice goal. It was really nice play to open up the space. It was a lovely ball in. It was a deft little touchback and a really good finish from Shipley, who, as you say, is a very, very good player at this level. I think he might have just come back from injury quite soon. Was it injury or suspension? One of them he came back for this game. I think it was injury. And it's a really, really nice goal, which was so out of character for everything else they had done in the first half and pretty much everything they did in the second half. And I genuinely think it was one of those games where, for me, whatever the metrics say, for how good the two teams were at the actual game of football, I thought 3-1 really flattered Shrewsbury, because the number of simple passes that went out of play, the number of bad first touches, the number of individual mistakes and slices into the crowd, I genuinely just thought they were rubbish, to be honest. And after, you know, the Derby game on Tuesday, Derby were really genuinely good and lined up really well and executed really well and created a really good game of football to watch, I think, for the neutral. But, you know, as a fan, knowing we didn't lose the game, I can now say, yeah, that was a really good game of football. This, maybe because it had immediately followed that, so I was kind of comparing it. But yeah, the first half of this just felt rubbish, to be honest with you. And that's not Pompey performance. That's just what Shrewsbury were contributing to the game for me.
And it is quite a good goal, because actually, I think it's Taylor Perry who gets up for the assist for the layback. He's actually a holding midfielder. He's got two goals, one assist in 40 games for them this season. It's quite an interesting one in that sense, if that's the case, because he basically drives the middle when Daniel Udo goes out wide. So he sees that, he sees him on the counter, and he drives straight into the centre of the box. And from that space, he's not picked up by the defence. Fred, do you think there's a case that somebody maybe should have watched that run coming from such a deep player?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think Pompey's defending was brilliant in this attack at all, to be honest. Swanson gets a bit caught on that side further forward, then the through ball into space. And although Daniel Udo didn't seem to have much threat in him, his link-up play around the penalty area was quite good. So he was able to drive into the penalty area, make that lovely pass in. And then, yeah, it reminded me very much of the goal Pompey conceded against Wickham when Matt Butcher had that extra space arriving late into the penalty area. It was pretty much exactly the same, with Perry making that very nice touch. And Shipley was all alone at the edge of the box. And you could tell from the back of the front end that the finish seemed a bit simpler than it might have been. It pretty much just looked as if he passed it into the net in slow motion. And Pompey have been caught out like that a few times, where an extra midfielder joins the attack and then they're just suddenly in space on their own and they're not picked up. But hopefully those are just individual instances rather than just anything specific.
Yeah, I do think it's one of those goals where there are, as you say there, Fred, there are avoidable aspects of the build-up. But I think it's one of those where you just have to say it was genuinely a well-executed move by Shrewsbury. I think I put my hands up a bit and said that was just a good goal, to be honest with you, which, as I say, was out of context for most of their performance, but shows what the players are capable of, albeit inconsistently. But Norris is not saving that in a millennium of Sundays. It's not happening. He's not getting a hand to it ever. It's a really nice finish from Shipley. And yeah, at that point, you're thinking, oh, this could, especially with us shooting towards the Milton end second half, you're thinking, oh, this could be a bit of a, you know, don't know if we're going to get as much momentum in the second half as normal. To be fair, I thought the Milton end were really good in this game as well. Obviously, Pompey had most of the fans in the Milton end, unlike the Derby game. And I thought the fans in the Milton end really added something, especially in this game, in terms of the atmosphere and in terms of maybe creating more of a 360 environment of support for the home team.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see against Bolton if Josh Sheehan is a player who plays in that role, if he manages to arrive late in the box unpicked up. But maybe something to look out for. We talk about that game later on. But Let's move on to the penalty then, because it was good to go into half time a goal up. Obviously, Kamara does well down the left hand side. He actually changed wings quite a lot, didn't he, in this game? I think they decided to change wings, him and Paddy Lane. I thought Lane looked a little bit leggy in this game, actually. I think he's played a lot of football, so I was kind of surprised that he actually started, but it's definitely not anything against Paddy Lane. He's been exceptional this season. I just thought he maybe has had a lot of games played and needed a break, but Kamara changes wings with him, comes down the left-hand side. He cuts it back to Yengi. He's just got quick feet, hasn't he? And he just sort of dances around the two players. He wins the penalty. Question marks over where's the penalty? I want to know your thoughts on this, Andy Mitchell.
I think, what was it the Salop cast decided to call Yengi? Yengi is a cheat, I think was their tagline. And then they complained that they got engagements. They're funny, that. Let's throw some bait out there for people to bite onto and then complain when we get responses. I thought it was probably, for me, it's less of a penalty than Angerin's the week before that didn't get given. It was Andrew, wasn't it? Went down. Yeah, and it didn't get given last week. Having said that, I think there's a decent argument watching it back on slow-mo that his left leg does get caught, but I don't know how much you can really make the judgment in slow-mo. You know, you can, in slow-mo, you could definitely make the argument either way. I think it's a soft penalty. Having said that, I think the defenders put themselves in a position there where they give the referee a decision to make. And when there's one of them on either side leaning in, getting, you know, one of them getting his legs a little bit tangled, and the two players are blocking the direct sight of the referee, I think it's kind of on the defenders, to be honest with you. And yeah, I think probably that penalty maybe isn't being given maybe 6 times out of 10. However, it's certainly, I'm not going to start calling it a Yengi dive, certainly not, because there is contact. I think just on the penalty itself, honestly, my biggest frustration for this game, another reason I didn't enjoy the first half, there's just a couple of people who just really, I felt like a lot of negative atmosphere from individuals, not from the majority. And, you know, there was sort of two people a couple of rows behind me who were shouting abuse at Paddy Lane when he lost the ball a couple of times, saying he was effing this and effing that and various swear words, saying how bad a footballer he was. And then when the penalty got given for Pompey, when Bishop had the ball in his hand, it was, give it to effing Yengi, you effing whatever. And it's just like, well, you are never going to be happy, are you? You're never going to be happy. And I'm glad Bishop took it. I'm glad Bishop buried it, because it shut them up for about 5 minutes before they got stuck into someone else. It's just, how I just wanted to get that little rant out. How can you be negative at a time like this and feel that that's an appropriate thing to be yelling? The guy on the side of me, other than Proudy, who I had to my left. Did I have Proudy to my left for this game? I think I did.
You have Matt next to you, mate.
I had Matt. Oh, my word. These all blurred together. Thank you. The guy to the other side of me from Matt was... we were having a bit of a laugh about it, about how some people are just never happy. Was it really Corrick next to me for this game? Huh. Yeah, you're right. It was. I'm glad you remember.
Looking back at the penalty here, I felt really sorry for Carl Winchester, who pretty much committed to try and make the challenge. Because what else are the defenders really supposed to do there? Yengi had the ball quite close to the six-yard box. Arguably wasn't going anywhere, but I think it's incredibly soft. And if that penalty was given against Portsmouth, I'd be raging. So I'm not really surprised. I don't think it was a penalty in the slightest, but
some people around Andy were talking to give it to Yengi. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, the guy who takes penalties when Bishop isn't on the pitch, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the penalty and someone chucks in the ball. But, you know, you can just see how terrible the team atmosphere is good. He chucks it to Bishop, who's the player who takes our penalties when he's on the pitch, and it's an emphatic penalty. Some people around me were saying, oh, you know, just before half time is not the time for Colby Bishop to be taking a penalty after he's missed a couple.
Different end, though, isn't it? Different
exactly.
End. It was Fratton.
That's
end.
What I said. Fun. Yeah, exactly. In front of the Fratton, he doesn't fail. It's a great penalty as well. Sends the keeper the wrong way, bottom corner, with pace as well, which would have made it difficult for the keeper to stop, even if he goes the other way. Pompey going to half-time, 2-1 up. Let's move on to the second half. Not a lot happens in this half, if I'm honest. Daniel Udo has a couple of chances. He didn't capitalise on a mistake at the back where Pompey just a little bit lacklustre. He gets onto it. Will Norris does really well to stand tall in these big moments and stop yeah, potentially Pompey being equalised against. And then it's just a really nice worked goal, isn't it, for the 3-1 to Colby Bishop. Shout out Christian Sadie for the assist, because what a beautiful little chip pass through that is. Absolute techers through to Bishop. They know what they're doing. Move the Shrewsbury defence around, and it's 3-1. And at that stage of the game, I'm just thinking, it's just playing it out, really, wasn't it? Never in doubt. And it was just those sort of count the clock down, sing some songs, and go home.
Yeah, obviously we have a mix-up at the back where it's one of those moments where time seems to stand still. Shocking to see Norris leaving the ball for each other, and your heart's in your mouth and you're kind of expecting to see the ball buried bottom corner. And yeah, comes out, makes himself big and does what he's done time and time again this season, where maybe he's not called on in every game by any stretch because the four in front of him have consistently done such a good job. But when he has been called on in those crunch, clutch moments, he stepped up. Barcelona have just scored a goal just like our third, by the way, with a little dink ball over the top and a first-time finish. It was like watching Sadie and Bishop, except it's two players on 10 million a week who I wouldn't recognise if I walked past
them. So what you're saying is Pompey or Barcelona?
I think we're financially a bit better off than Barca in terms of our debts and our legal investigations. But yeah, it's a lovely ball over from Sadie, isn't it? He showed in this game as well his strength a few times in terms of getting away from defenders and just using that upper body strength. He sort of a slightly smaller build Akinfenwa, and he just gets his head down and just people bounce off him, and he uses his upper body strength to just muscle people away from him whilst keeping control of the ball. But with the setup, it's a lovely little dink over the top. Bishop watches the ball come down over his shoulder, and finishing with the ball coming over your shoulder almost is a very difficult technique. So I don't think we should underestimate how good technically that finish was. And I mean, after we had a few weeks of a certain portion of the fan base saying he's just a penalty merchant, how many is that in open play in the last few weeks? It's a good retort, I would say. But yeah, lovely to see him in the right place at the right time finishing that from Sadie.
I thought Sadie had a brilliant game when he came on. Yengi, I like to see that relationship between Yengi and Bishop a little bit. I think it worked yes and no in this game. I thought the link-up was okay. Yengi was a focal point at times. Bishop was able to tie up a few defenders. But I think Sadie definitely showed the role that he's best at, coming in off the bench. And if the ball is sticking in a little bit in the midfield, driving play properly. There was a period earlier in the game when Bishop had a shot from outside the penalty area. The ball wouldn't have got to him if Sadie didn't win the ball, was able to dribble forwards all the way halfway across Shrewsbury's defensive half. And that was a lovely bit of vision by Sadie for that pass. He could have easily just had a shot, because we've seen him had a shoot like that from many angles similar, or many situations similar. But no, it was excellent awareness for him to do that. Little chip pass to Bishop, who very nicely tucked it into the corner.
So we go 3-1 up and you think it's, you know, probably game over. You can't see Shrewsbury scoring another two based on their performance so far in the game. And then, yeah, they create something out of nothing. And rather than being pulled back to 3-2 pretty much immediately after we score, Raggett puts his body on the line, gets a key block in that probably does stop a goal in itself. How many times this season has he done that? I know we don't want to repeat ourselves week in, week out, but I mean, Freddie, say some nice things about Sean Raggett.
I thought he was man of the match in this game by quite a way, because I thought Pompey struggled in the wide areas an awful lot, but Raggett and Shottesy were able to lock it down by some very good defensive play. And Raggett's marshalled defence in this game quite nicely. And he's improved so much this season compared to the previous two or three, that he's playing his way into a contract extension. And that's probably the biggest compliment that you could give. Because at the beginning of the season and parts of the start of the season, Pompey fans would never have considered it, I don't think. But the fact that he's improved so much of his ability on the ball, his positional sense has been excellent, he's still dominant in the air a lot of times, he can still get caught out by a fast winger running at him or dribbling at him, or a fast attacker being in that scenario and in one-on-one situations. But he's been excellent this season, and he's been able to replace all the other centre-halves that have come in basically took his position away, but whenever he's been back in the side, he's done incredibly well.
Yeah, echo your comments. And we'll come on in the off-season to contracts, who we think are going to be extended, where they're going to fit in the pecking order and all that. But Sean Raggett's doing everything he can at this moment in time to make sure that he's definitely part of that squad anyway. And we'll work out where he lies in that squad depth, I suppose, going into next season. But yeah, you got to credit him for this game. And him and Shaughnessy together as a partnership have been outstanding and been that platform Pompey've had at the back in order to close games out and be so solid defensively as a team. Yeah, he's been outstanding. All right, let's move on now, guys. Let's talk about some bits we've spoke about in the news. Fred, do you want to talk quickly about Evans potentially being involved in the contract talks for next season, since we're on that topic already?
Yeah, absolutely. So Jordan Cross reported this in the news after speaking to John Messino. The manager said that Lee Evans could have a future at Fratton Park next season. He was at Ipswich last season, but underwent knee surgery in October, so didn't play an awful lot before arriving at Pompey. Messino said it was great for the club to bring in a player of Evans' stature, as he's senior pro, played in the championship before, been a part of sides that have gone promoted out of the division, and has showed massive enthusiasm, in quotes, and has done a magnificent job since he came in. I think he did incredibly well in the Derby game. That was a massive game to throw him into, considering the lack of minutes he had before, and I thought he did incredibly well, especially in the first half. Also had a couple of appearances here and there, and it's definitely the sort of player that you could imagine Pompey extending for next season if promotion happens. But it's interesting that Messino talked about that possibility. Obviously, they're not talking about contract extensions at the moment, because even if it's more likely Pompey will end up in the Championship, it's not confirmed yet. And yeah, that was just a nice little tidbit that came out today. The only other bit of news is on the injury front. Tom Lowry's back in full training, so he's available for selection again. So Ben Stevenson as well. So there's lots of competition in the centre of midfield now, after having barely any options for ages, so that's nice. Callum Lang is also back in training, but won't be fit for the Bolton game. So Pompey will have to try and figure out the attacking midfield option, though Tino Andrian is fine for selection. And as reported by Neil Allen, Anthony Scully picked up another recurring injury and is basically out for the season and won't be available for selection until pre-season.
Yeah, sad for Anthony Scully, who's going to be remembered as one of those players who will be in a Pompey quiz of members that are forgotten, essentially, for the team of this season. I hope he gets better and recovers, because obviously he's had a couple of seasons now where he's been injured effectively and had nearly two seasons out now. So, you know, thoughts out to Anthony Scully. Hope he recovers well over the summer and can come back as a player. Right, let's move on. Andy Mitchmore, the Pompey women, effectively, I believe, are 1 point away from securing their promotion to the Women's Championship.
I mean, not even effectively. They are 1 point away. They are effectively promoted. So they took on Plymouth Argyle at the weekend just gone. We know that Plymouth Argyle enjoy losing games in key championship deciding fixtures, but I mean, Plymouth aren't really at the top of the table in that league, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, Pompey came out as 3-0 winners. So there was one own goal, one from Lita Rutherford and one from Reva Cassidy, so who scored a penalty to make it 3-0. So essentially, the only way that Pompey don't win that league is if they lose their last two games, hashtag win their last two games, and there is a goal difference swing of 40. So basically, Pompey need to lose both games 10-0, hashtag need to win both games 10-0, which even the most cynical aspect of my brain is not thinking is a likely outcome. So yeah, not officially confirmed. If Pompey get a draw next time out, it is mathematically confirmed that they will be going up alongside Newcastle to the Women's Championship, which is same as it is in the men's game, one div below, in their case, WSL1, so their Premier League, essentially. So that would put us in the same league as Southampton, which would be, you know, a double derby season for men and the women's team. So, boys, we can go and get, you know, get some verbal abuse going at four games in the season instead of two, which would be quite something if the men go up. So the season they've had is just staggering. Their goal difference compared to other team, every other team in the league, is, I think the word I keep using is obscene. And it, the league table just looks ridiculous when you look at it. You know, they've lost one game all season. They're unbeaten in 16, 17. I think they won 15 in a row and drew one, and then they've won against MK Dons, and then they've won this weekend. So it must be 17 or 18 unbeaten. If you're interested in seeing some sort of game day footage of that, match day footage, check out Ian Chiverton and his team doing their match day vlogs at Pompey Women Vlogs on YouTube. I think I might have got that name wrong. But if you just type Pompey Women Vlog into YouTube, it will come up. They're well worth a look. Chiv, his family and their little group follow the team up and down the country to every game and record it. So, yeah, hopefully we'll have that double open-top bus parade or two separate open-top bus parades or whatever you think it should be if the men's seal promotion as well. But just, yeah, massive credit to them, to be honest with you. And it would be great to see the attendances at the games go up a bit next season because, I mean, in the women's champ, you're getting some women's teams picking up, you know, 10, 15,000 at some games. And it would be outstanding to see Pompey do that because I think we normally get a couple of thousand. But, you know, with that promotion under their belt, I think we need to make a real push for getting the Pompey women up the priority list, which from that fan feedback thing, women were down the sort of the bottom end of that spectrum in terms of fan priorities that were reported. So big push for that next season. Pompey women, you're legends. Congratulations. We'll officially congratulate you when it's done, probably next week.
Yeah, on the attendance, especially since you look at teams in the same division like Ipswich, who have got a lot better with their attendances for the women. So is what it is, but hopefully that can increase. All right, let's move on. We spoke to Ben from the Trotty Chatter to talk about everything about the game on Saturday away at Bolton. It's such a big game. We wanted to know what Bolton fans feeling about it. Would they take a draw? Would they be happy? Do they need to win this game? We spoke about some of the feelings about Ian Everett, their manager, you know, some negativity towards him. How are they going to line up? You know, the rise of James Collins in the last few games and his goal scoring and how it could be a threat against the team. But here's Ben from Trotter Chatter Podcast. All right, I'm here with Ben from Trotter's Chatter. And Ben, thanks for coming on the show.
Not a problem, mate.
Yeah, no, it's nice to have you on. Leading up to the big game this weekend on Saturday, it's effectively the best home team in the league against the second best away team in the league. How do you feel leading up to this game? Obviously, you know, you've turned some good results recently. You're catching Derby. You know, what's the aim of this game? Do you think you guys can still get the autos, obviously, but you know, can you take the title?
I think titles fairly gone now. I said a few weeks ago, I quite frankly wanted you guys to run off with it. I didn't want that to be a thought in the matter. I just wanted us to try and focus on what we're doing. In terms of the game, like you said, with being essentially the best home team, I never think we'll lose at home, but obviously it's going to be the hardest home game we have all season. I really don't know. I'm far more nervous than I thought I'd have to be at this point. When we were, 5 points behind with 3 games in hand, I thought that Portsmouth game might be lovely. And now I can't stand the idea of playing it, to be honest.
I think it's fairly mutual, to be honest, Ben, if that helps. It's not a one-way thing. I don't think we're particularly looking forward to it either. Last time we played you, well, whenever it was, earlier in the season, you lined up. It was 3 at the back and Cassini Yenge gave Santos a pretty hard time of it throughout the game. Are you still lining up with that same 3 at the back formation? Is that what we can expect to see this weekend? Or do you think there'll be a bit of tweaking going on based on what happened last time out against us?
I would love for the bit to be some tweaking. However, our manager will refuse outright to change formation in any way. I think when he first joined, he tried 4 at the back and we ended up in the League Two relegation zone. He switched to 3 at the back and we went on the longest unbeaten run in the UK. So he's kind of stuck with that since, really. It's not necessarily what I'm thrilled with us playing all the time. You know, we can sometimes be a bit stagnant with the ball, sort of like we're trying to wait for other teams to make a mistake as opposed to trying to force the issue ourselves. It's what he's going to play. Santos will still be in the middle of the back three. And I mean, that was probably arguably one of his worst games of the season against Yenge. So if, you know, if he could not play, I'd be thrilled with that.
Ian Everett's spoken an awful lot leading around this time about the injuries that Bolton have had. Obviously, Dion Charles came back in the last game after a while out. Nathan Baxter, first-choice goalkeeper, was out injured for a bit as well with a wrist injury. And Pompey fans look at that and think, hey, our squad managed to deal with five or six season-ending injuries and not dropped off. Is that injury record, is it as bad as Ian Everett says? And is that one of the reasons why Bolton didn't capitalise on the games in hand? Or was it something else?
I mean, I believe I made a point identical to what you've just said, where if injuries were our excuse, look at Portsmouth, who've had worse injuries and have maintained their position. Baxter being injured, I don't think we really knew how good he was until he was gone. Like our backup Coleman, he grew into it, but he sort of, there were some games where it looked like he'd forgotten how to be a goalkeeper and he was having to learn on the fly, which, yeah, some baffling decisions he made. And I guess with Charles being out as well, it's kind of similar. Like we signed Aaron Collins, who is now getting amongst the goals a bit. Jon Daði Böðvarsson has been okay, but not really a goal scoring striker. Very much sort of trying to link the play together. Those two have been the big misses. Realistically, I think our biggest issue is that as a squad, we don't really seem to have the bottle in the bigger games. Like, we do seem to panic a lot against the bigger teams. Like, our record against the top six this season is, if we don't go up, that's the reason. Like, we just haven't been good enough. The big games, we crumble a bit. Like, the 2-0 against you guys, when we played Derby recently, we weren't great there. But it's not even the top six, just any game that seems like it means a bit of something. Like, we play Wigan, you know, our biggest rivals at this level, and home game we lost 4-0. And then the away game, we were all over them and still lost. Injuries have played a little bit of a factor, but I think the mentality of the squad's a much bigger problem than any injury we've had.
You discussed about Aaron Collins then coming in for Dean Charles and how he sort of kicked off a little bit recently. Obviously, got that hat-trick against Reading and a 5-2 win recently, and then scored both two goals away against Bristol Rovers, scoring against his former club there. What kind of threat difference is Aaron Collins against Dion Charles? I always thought a bit of a sort of like more of a penalty box striker, but you know, how are the Pompey defence going to have to alter the game compared to the game we played at Fratton Park?
Well, we've said from the first games Collins played, he's a much better all-round footballer than Dion Charles. Like, Dion Charles is, he's good in the box. He'll chase everything down, but Collins brings a lot more to our actual play compared to what Dion can do. He's he'll start a move and then be the one to finish it, as opposed to Dion, who's very much sort of looking to get onto a ball played into the box. It's weird. Like, last season, Charles was so good for us, and we said him signing a new contract was potentially bigger than any signing we might end up making. Whereas now, if you gave him the option, I genuinely don't even know if he'd start. But that might just be because he's been gone for a couple of months. If he plays Saturday and scores the winner, I'm sure everything will be more than forgiven.
The fan relationship with Ian Everett seems to be fairly up and down. I mean, I don't know how well he's enjoying the ride. I saw an interview sort of a week after you'd played Derby, and he was sort of saying, you know, he'd been up at night a week on. He was still going through the motions of that game and how you lost it 6 days on and hadn't kind of switched off from it. And I mean, obviously, social media fans are a relatively small minority of the overall fan base. but the social media portion of your fan base seems to have quite mixed feelings towards the guy, considering, you know, you're currently sitting in the automatics. And from the outside, that maybe seems a little bit...
Two points out of the automatics, Andy.
Thank you.
You got me really excited.
Yeah. Oh, this is much better than we thought. Yeah, sorry.
All Bolton fans are going to pick on you for that as well.
Hopefully on Sunday, you'll still be outside of the automatics. But for being so close to the automatics then, that still looks a little bit odd to have such a maybe a divide between some of the fan base and the manager. Can you sort of describe what's been going on then, why that might be the case?
Yeah, it's, I mean, as a podcast, we've probably been some of the more vocal ones in that we aren't necessarily his biggest fans. Like, there's some of the comments he makes almost seem like they're intentionally designed to piss us off. Like, before the Reading game, he said it felt like we were going in with a water pistol instead of an armada, which isn't... If you're going to try and sort of rally your team, maybe not the best way to go about it. It's just some of the things he says is his insistence on the way he plays football, despite it not always being what gets us results. He's called himself a self-professed football snob. And I'd really enjoy if sometimes he wasn't a snob and he just did what we needed to win games. But it's Derby fans apparently are in a very similar position to us, where they also aren't huge fans of their manager. Like, it's with us, it's potentially knowing the position we were in and feeling like we should be, based on the position we were in, like I said, five behind with three games at hand. We could very easily have been where you guys are right now. And I think it can't all fall on the manager. And some people have said, obviously, he's not the one out there on the pitch. But at the same time, he's the one that's picking the team. If the tactics aren't working, it's on him to change. It's a combination of things, really. I mean, the main one for me is, like I said, it's like he's almost intentionally trying to annoy everyone. It's very much comes across as, if all the talk's been about the squad for a week, it's almost like he has to say something to remind people that he's there as well.
Is that not just to try and deflect the sort of the pressure off the squad? I know some managers sort of come out and make these comments almost to try and take the pressure off the squad and put it on the manager. Do you feel that's what he's trying to do? Or,
I mean, there's definitely an argument to say that's what he could be doing, but I don't know. There's just, he doesn't seem like a very likable person. I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective. It could very much be what he's doing. But then the comment he made about, like, not having, like, waking up at night still thinking about the Derby game, it's also his job to try and inspire confidence in the team. And, like, again, the water pistol comment, it's just going to have the exact opposite effect. But I'd love if it was him just trying to deflect it. I do think our squad does have a slightly fragile mentality. So maybe trying to push the blame away from them and onto himself could be, you know, it'd be a very smart thing to do. I'm just not necessarily sure he's smart enough to have thought of doing it.
I looked into some of the advanced analytics for Bolton. They're scoring an awful lot of goals compared to the quality chances they're actually taking, with 78 goals and about 68 expected goals. On the opposite way around, the expected goals against and the goals conceded are pretty much the same, in line with each other. So is it just a case of Bolton's defence leaking at the wrong moment with individual errors? And just, is that the main reason why Bolton aren't in the position they are?
It's actually quite interesting you said that. I would have thought we've conceded more than we're expected to. like defensively we are quite solid, but it is these moments where we will, like, someone will make an error. Like, also we had the game wrapped up against Reading, but the second goal was childish defending. Like, no one was trying. No one was, like, people had given up. Like, it was 4-1 in the last minute. They went, oh, whatever. I'll let them do what they want. But also, I'm also quite surprised that we've scored more than we expect. So we've had some where we have scored quite a few, like 5 against Reading, 7 past Exeter, or it was 4 against Carlisle. But we also, the way we play, it doesn't lend itself to creating like a high number of chances. It's more about creating high quality ones. Like, we'll very much try and break a team down as opposed to like having a shot from distance. Like, since Collins has come in, that's been one of the things I've noticed massively. Like, his first one against Reading, none of our other strikers would have even thought. Their first thought would have been, right, find a man in open space on the wing, see if we can get a cross in. Collins immediately looked at the ball and went, no, I'm having this. We've got a couple of other players that are willing to do it, but you've really thrown me by saying we've scored more than we should have. That's the exact opposite to what I would have said. That's nice, though. Can't really complain.
All right, let's look at the time and let's wrap this up. And I want to know, Ben, here we go for the big game. Your score prediction, please, for the game on Saturday and any goal scorers.
So I always more confident when we're at home. I'm going to say 1-1. I would say, who's most likely to score for us? Collins for us. And it's probably going to be Yenge, isn't it? I don't know why I'm thinking about it. It's probably going to be him.
Just as a quick follow-up on that, Ben, that 1-1 prediction, would you be happy with that if we offered it to you now at 90 minutes? Do you take that? Or do you think realistically, I mean, obviously it'll partially depend on, I guess, on how Derby are getting on tonight at the time of recording, but would you say that the 1-1 draw would be a good result, assuming Derby do pick up the 3 points in their game?
It's not necessarily the result we need, but I think it's... I mean, I'd still absolutely take a 1-1. Like, after the results recently, I think a lot of Bolton fans they've got a lot more optimistic about our chances, but at the end of the day, it still isn't in our hands. Like, we can only do as well as we can, and we're known for crumbling in high-pressure situations. I think 1-1... we could win. Men have bones about it, we could win. But if you offer me 1-1 now, I would absolutely take it.
Thank you. This makes me laugh. Like, the whole the feel of this sort of chat, you can tell it's an end of season one, and I can feel it the sort of when Hugh and I and Fred chat sometimes. There's just a jaded feel to it. Like, guys, I'm so tired. This has really taken it out of me, and I'm really getting that exhausted. Vibe from you.
I am exhausted. It's been the longest season of my life. The idea about having to do another month of playoffs is not what I need. I just want to lie down in a dark room and to not think about football for a few months.
That's what that summer break's for, isn't it, as podcasters? Just chilling out and putting out the odd interview with former players, right?
We're too controversial for players to talk to us. We're not PG enough, apparently. We just talk about best 11s and...
Why don't you tell people where they can find your pod and listen to your preview show for the game, or maybe your review after the game?
Yeah, so we are at Trotter Chat Pod on Twitter and all your other social media. Not all your other social media, it's literally just Twitter and Instagram. Spotify and all the lovely places you get your lovely podcasts. We'll be having a chat tomorrow about it, I'm sure. Everyone will share my opinions that I really, really don't want to have to play Portsmouth with 4 games to go.
All right, guys, go and check that out. And I have actually been tuning in a few times to some of your episodes, Ben, in the build-up for the last couple of months. So it is a good listen, guys. Go and have a listen to Ben's podcast. And cheers, Ben, for coming on.
Not a problem. Best of luck after Saturday.
Thanks, Ben. That's my phrase usually, but I'll let you steal it. Thanks, Ben, for coming on the podcast. That was an interesting one, wasn't it, boys? Ben mentioned that he would take a 1-1 in this game. I think Bolton sort of need to win this game. There's a lot more pressure on them to win the game, would you say, rather than us, Andy? Or do you think it's one of those games where the pressure's a little bit on us? I did see with Marlon Pack talking to Sky, who was on Sky Sports News earlier today, and he was saying that although it is just another game, they do know the implications of this game. They do understand this is what their season's been working towards and all that kind of thing. So do you think it's a case pressure on Bolton to come and win this game? And could that lead to something? Or do you think Pompey are going to come out and try and get the 3 points for that reason?
I absolutely think Pompey will come out and try and get the 3 points. I think Messino, at no point in the season, has set the team up to go out and get a draw. I can't think of a single game, as is evidenced by the fact that we've done so well against the other teams in the top eight in the table. The one thing that Ben said that really stuck out to me was how poor Bolton's record is against other teams in that top eight echelon of League One. It's the complete antithesis of our record against the other teams in the top eight. So based off that, you think that, you know, the big pressure situations when push comes to shove, Bolton do seem to struggle a little bit under pressure, and there is more pressure on them than us. I think there is obviously pressure on the Pompey side. Like, you can't pretend that there isn't, and the Pompey players haven't got their heads in the sand. They know exactly what's going on in the league table. They know exactly what the implications are if they do win on Saturday. I mean, unless Derby score in the next 2 minutes at time of recording, if Pompey win on Saturday, we win League One, which you cannot bury your head in the sand and pretend that isn't the case. That will be in their mind somewhere. But I do think in terms of absolute necessity, Bolton do have more pressure on them than us. But I think I'd like to think that we'll play the way we have against the other seven teams below us in the table, home and away this season, other than Barnsley, obviously, who we still have to play at home. And it's been positive football throughout. If Derby score from this attack, then I'm going to be very, very upset. But, oh boy, into the box, ball in, keeper's hands, yes, get in there. So, I think more pressure on Bolton, but if Derby don't win this game against Wickham, I think Bolton will be okay with a point and then try and sort of steal it from Derby in the running. Fred, what are your thoughts?
Similar to you, if it's a 1-1 draw, I'd snap your hand off now and run away with it personally. Bolton have always been a very good footballing side.
You're not running away with my hand. It's very important to me.
Bolton have always been a good footballing side, can control possession, create very clear goal scoring chances, and they've got loads of threats all across the pitch. But the fact that their defence is gettable and they don't really know what they're doing out of possession could prove decisive in this game. I'm positive for Pompey. There's nothing at this stage of the season that would make me feel otherwise. And, three points could be on the offing, I think.
Have Derby just scored, Andy? No. It's like a live reaction podcast around the league with Andy at the moment in time. There's seven screens playing matches from around the world. But
I mean, around the world, everything from Paris through to Wickham. Yeah, and everything in between.
All right, boys. Should we do our score predictions for this game and move on to the Barnsley game?
Yep, sounds good to me.
Freddie Webb, I don't want to know your score prediction, please, for the game on Saturday and any goal scorers.
I may as well go for the result that we've mentioned wanting. I'm going to go for the 1-1 draw. I'm going to go for Colby Bishop for Pompey. And I'm going to go for Aaron Collins for Bolton.
Annie Mitchmore?
I am going to go with a 1-1 draw, to be honest with you. I think it's very similar to the Derby game. To quote Fred, I'll snap his hand off and run away with it if we take that 1-1 draw. Derby have just drawn with Wickham. So if we win Saturday, we go up. We win the league. Derby almost lost that with the last kick of the game. They were about half a second from their keeper getting robbed by the Wickham forward player, because the keeper slipped over. That was close to absolute banter FC. But that's finished 0-0. I'll go with a 1-1 draw. I think it's similar to Derby in that it would be a fantastic result for us in the big scheme of things. And based off, I mean, we're about to speak about Barnsley with Alan from their podcast. I think with the run of form they're on, with our last three games being Barnsley, Wigan, Lincoln, if we get a point this weekend, I will think, you know, that'll be a draw against Peterborough. Sorry, a win against Peterborough, a draw against Bolton, a draw against Derby. That's an excellent return on investment for those games at this point in the season when we've got the points advantage. What's your prediction, Hugh?
Just looking at the table now, and it's interesting because that means that it's in Bolton's hands against us now, going into this game, doesn't it? So if they beat us, effectively they go ahead of Derby into the automatics. It's going to be a big game. Oh, you guys have got a bit safer with 1-1s. I'm going to go out there. Why not? I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. Goals from Abu Kamara and Connor Ogilvy in a bizarre game, I feel like. Back and forward, both teams wanting to win it. Bolton have the opportunity now to leapfrog Derby into the automatics, have it in their own hands. Pompey potentially going for the title. This is two teams that can basically get their promotion into their own hands and go up as the top two, one as champions or one in the second place into the auto. So it's game on, isn't it? And I think both managers want to win this game. So I'm going to go for a rather crazy 2-2 draw. Right. Let's move on. With all the pressure on the game on Saturday, but if you're listening after this, we wanted to bring you the Barnsley previews. We spoke to Alan from Red All Over to talk about everything on the game on Tuesday against Barnsley. We discussed Barnsley's dip in form at the moment, potentially holding on to a playoff place with the rise of Lincoln and Oxford sorting their shit out for once. We discussed, you know, why it's not clicking at Barnsley, how their physical presence isn't quite working like it was before against Pompey when we played away at Barnsley at Oakwell. And generally, what Barnsley fans are so frustrated about of what they perceive as rather dull football at this moment in time. So here's Alan from Red All Over. All right, I'm here with Alan from Red All Over. And Alan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting us, lads.
No, it's a pleasure. It's all ours, mate. Barnsley's a funny team. People know listening to the podcast that I'm friends with a lot of Barnsley fans. In fact, I predict their scores every week. I did really well when you guys were in the championship. Not so well this year because obviously I like to have a bit of banter and you've actually done a lot better. But talking about you doing a lot better, the form's really dropped off recently, hasn't it? And the performances as well. So, you know, what's the main cause of that after an absolute storm? You know, we're looking at one win now in the last five.
It's poor since we went 2-0 up against Bolton Wanderers 5th of March. Played well for 60 minutes, could have had more goals, and then they come back and for the last 30 minutes put us on back foot, and we drew 2-2. Ever since then, we've not been good at all. It's 1-1, drawn 1, lost 4. We're not doing well to try and get behind me to Wembley. We're looking over his shoulders now at teams who are pushing to get into top six. And I think we picked up 7 points from 18 since Derby, which isn't good, and only scored 9 goals, conceding 14. So the wheels have definitely come off the bus at our football club. And I don't understand the reason. It's slow, pedantic football, play to cross back line, and teams come and sit back and park the bus, and we can't break them down. And coaches have sussed us out.
Mm. In terms of your starting lineup, I'm just looking at who you lined up with against Stevenage yesterday at time of recording. And probably the names that we would pick out as Barnsley danger men if we were just doing the pod ourselves. I mean, we're looking at players like Devante Cole would probably be the one that would jump out at us. And also Herbie Kane, who was linked with us a few years ago now briefly. And Well, I keep an eye out on how he's getting on anyway, for that reason alone. And they were on the subs bench and came on. Devante Cole especially seems to be, I mean, that's the danger man by a distance on paper. Is there a reason that those aren't in the starting lineup, or have you just been rotating to try and find a formula that works while in bad form?
it were up there, one of the leading scorers in League One, and all of a sudden the goals dried up. But it's all to deliver, isn't it? It's all to getting behind and getting balls in, and we're not getting there. We're not getting the balls into his feet. I mean, away from home, he got a few goals by running behind defence. It's just not happening. Just not happening. Herbie Kane, he got suspended and then come back, and he's not the same player. We're just disillusioned, the Barnsley fans, with what's gone wrong. And in a poor league, I mean, I got US top when fixtures come out and everything come out, and you made good signings in summer. I got US top. I got you going up because you did do good business. Thing with us is we've not done good business. We lost our keeper, Harry Eisted, who would have been signing if Duffy had stopped. He went to Charlton. We lost Mads Andersen, who went to Luton. Kitchen went to Coventry. Lo Neal, we had from Burnley. He then went with Kitchen to Burnley. So when you look at it, we lost his back three, goalkeeper. Collins came in, and to be honest, it was difficult to try and see where he was going to go and get the team that he wanted. And then we cancelled pre-season because he came in from Tampa Bay Rowdies. So it's been difficult. We've done well. We've got into the top six, but at the moment, we're on free fall.
Looking back at the previous results and the run to get Barnsley into that position, a lot of them were high-scoring games, frantic and from an outsider's point of view, and it seemed that Barnsley's attack, at any rate, was clicking because Adam Phillips, John McAtee and Devante Cole, all three of them have goals. You had Sam Cosgrove, who offers a different option if the defence is a bit more stubborn. What are the differences between Barnsley's run and doing very well and winning all those games to now where the results have dried up? What's the difference?
I can't put a finger on it. Is it team spirit? Is there something happening in the background what we as fans don't know? They don't seem to be as the unity as they had previously, you know what I mean? It's the team spirit doesn't seem to be there as it has been. And we're struggling. I mean, we went to Charlton on Saturday, and Kate and I, and a free kick. I don't think we set up for a free kick, and we gave a poor free kick away and scored again. The wall, for me, wasn't set up. It's the basics we're not doing right. And that's where it's coming back to bite us on backside, I think.
Talking about people being frustrated and team spirit was something you dropped in there, Alan. Neil Collins doesn't seem to be the most popular man with a lot of people. And we were just discussing, you know, with other clubs as well in the top six, some of them not all fans being that happy, but there seems to be a contingent of Barnsley, you know, supporters that want him effectively gone or want to get rid of him or at least, you know, put in their displeasure. Where do you land on that?
I don't think it's as wise to get sugar coach at this time in the season when we're pushing. It's the wrong time, but I can understand why, because it's boring football, and you know, it's possession based. We're a defender, you know, we don't seem to break through teams at all, or there's no runners making that run or getting into all on either flank. We've no wingers, so we're limited with how we can play and what style of play, and everybody says we've only got plan A, no plan B, no plan C. And that's difficult. Yeah, we lost Donovan Pines, who come in the January window and bolstered our defence, but he got injured. And it's not down to Donovan Pines missing him. It's the fact that he doesn't know, I don't think, his 11, starting 11 at this moment in time. And when you don't know your starting 11, who are you going to put in to start a game? Then it's got to be disjointed. It's, you know, you're playing excellent football, what I've seen.
Looking back at Pompey's last game against Barnsley, after Pompey went 3-0 out, Pompey didn't defend as well and made the game trickier than arguably it shouldn't have been. Barnsley counter-attacking against Pompey really well, direct balls out wide, and that's where, I think from memory, both where the goals come from. Is it just the fact that Barnsley aren't doing those sorts of plays as often now? And is it the fact that the style of play that's possession plays, is it just not suiting the players that Barnsley have?
It may be, it's not suiting them. You know, we've got a good creative midfield. You know, I think we've got one of the best midfields in League One with Herbie Kane, Adam Phillips and Luke O'Connell. But they, you know, we lost Luke for a long time because of his illness. It's just not clicking. You know, 3-4 yard passes aren't getting there, and teams are cutting it out and we're getting countered. We've got to be more, I don't know, I don't want us to be direct because we've been direct, but we've got to play through channels and we've got to be quick passing and moving, and it's just not happening. And we play handicap football. We give teams that one goal start before we start to try and get goals for ourselves. And you can't, honestly, play football in that mold, can you? You know, give goals away in first 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Just before I got into the score predictions and talk about the game itself, you're sitting on 74 points now. It's looking like the playoffs are where, you know, where you're going to end up now. And at some stage, you thought you could make a decent push for the automatics. If it is the playoffs, and I actually went to the playoff final against Sheffield Wednesday, do you feel confident going into the playoffs that this team in a sort of cup game has the ability, because you have so many good midfield players and potential match winners, that, you know, that you could go all the way in the playoffs? Or is it just a case that the Barnsley fans are sort of throwing in the towel a little bit now, or is that just overblown?
I think throwing in towel. We're looking over the shoulder to see Oxford, Lincoln. The only good thing is that Oxford and Lincoln have got to play each other, so that's a bonus. And I think we're one win away from cementing our position into playoff semi-final before final. A lot of fans are thinking that, you know, we haven't got the momentum, we're struggling for consistency. Yeah, the one-off games. I think we're all worried that if we do end up going up, there's a lot of building to go. We'll do a Wednesday as such. We won't do well in Championship if we do get up to final and win it, personally. A bridge too far for me.
Andy, what are you going to say quickly?
I was going to say, we've still got to play Lincoln as well, Alan. So we'll do our absolute utmost to take 3 points off him for you as well.
Thank you. You're good gentlemen, aren't you? I mean, last time I was at your ground, we're at 4-2 defeat in FA Cup.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we're a very charitable bunch. So, if we haven't secured promotion by then, I promise you we'll be trying on the final day of the season just for your own benefit.
Speak for yourself. I was going to play the under-18s, Andy. Just roll them up.
If we haven't gone up by that point, I hope you're not going to play the under-18s.
You never know.
That would be very ballsy. Just suddenly, okay, we need to win last day of the season to go up automatically. Right. Play all those academy lads whose contracts have been ended at the end of the season.
And what I've said on X and everything, I've just said I can't see where our next 3 points are coming from. And that's not being negative. If sides come and put men behind the ball and give us 55-60% possession, we can't break sides down. And that's a big worry.
You might be a bit better with us then, because we're not the kind of team who are going to sit back, and we're actually going to try and dominate the ball more so and play the game inside your half. So especially at home, we're not going to sit back. We're going to try and bring the game to you. We're going to commit men forward. It is quite patient in that sense with build up, but we're not a team that's going to want you to come to Fratton Park and just play the ball on the back line. If that happens, we're going to press you and try and turn it over. So there is a situation there where, you know, Barnsley have those players who you can get in behind us a little bit more, you know, hit us on the counter-attack, and maybe that can re-spark your potential push to turn your form around a little bit, if you're trying to look at it from a positive point of view, rather than some of the teams you've been playing recently who, you know, let's be honest, you're talking about them sitting behind the ball, sitting deep, and you guys having nothing to do. So, you know, no disrespect to the likes of Burton, Cambridge, Cheltenham, etc., but they are very much in that mould, whilst we are completely the opposite, I suppose, in that sense.
Yeah, right. You know, it'll be more expansive football, won't it? It should be a good game with two decent sides. But I think you've got more in locker than what we have.
That's fair enough. So on that basis, Alan, I want to know your score prediction, please. And any goal scorers?
No goal scorers. And I can see it being 3-0 to Portsmouth.
Oh, Alan, we love this as a guest. Like, yes. Please give us more of this.
It's behind me anyway at 3-0. Phillips 30. Unless we change our mentality, and as I say, against a top team, who's top of the league, they might raise the game and go for it. I don't know. We've nothing to lose at this moment in time, so we might give you a game.
So do you think Barnsley will end up still in the playoffs at the end of the season then?
By skin of his nose, I think. I think we look confident that we're going to be in there a few weeks ago, and we were pushing for top two. When we end up playing Bolton, we thought, you know, we've got a chance of going up with yourselves. And then all of a sudden, we've dropped off, haven't we? And we're on free fall. And I think we'll just scrape into playoffs with the skin of his nose, probably fifth or sixth.
It's a funny league, isn't it, though? With teams like Wickham going up through the playoffs, no disrespect to them. on the old COVID season. So you've got to be in it to win it, haven't you? But Alan, why don't you tell Pompey fans where they can check out your content online?
Check out our Red All Over show on YouTube. Subscribe. We used to, with Joe Beazle, who set up the Red All Over channel. It used to be on Dern FM radio. If you've heard of the Greatest Hits Radio, Bear bought Dern FM out, local radios out, and then Joe was made redundant. And he got the Red All Over brand to go and take it when he got made redundant. Unfortunately, due to his health, Joe had to leave, and he's passed it on to ourselves. And Andy, myself, who both have supported Barnsley since 1959-60 season, and we went to Sunday school together and school together since 5-year-olds, and we both, I was 70 in January, Andy's 70 next month, so it's a good blend of, and then there's Josh, who's the younger end, we've got Tracy, and a few others in, and yeah, it's a great show. We're passionate about our football club, as you are, and Craig as well. It's a good mix.
Well, go and check that out. I will put the links in the podcast description, guys, so you can go and check that out. But Alan, thanks for coming on the podcast, and good luck for the rest of the season. Do have a soft spot for Barnsley. I hope you get into the playoffs well, and if you do, I'll be following you guys there.
Well, I'll see you at Wembley.
Well, let's see. As long as no Barnsley fans.
Really hope we're not seeing you at Wembley, Alan. Something has gone.
I was going to say.
It comes to watch matches, Barnsley matches. I went to Wembley.
Okay. Not because we'll be there with you.
In Pompey.
Yeah,
your chance were in straight up the championship, weren't they?
Andy's panicking. No, I was at the last playoff final against Wednesday in the Barnsley end.
We should have had a penalty then.
I agree. Yeah, that was a devastating loss without going into it too much.
It won it in last minute, and to the team just down the road on A61. Yeah, we're still suffering that one, but we're still seeing Reds fans Wednesday get battered everywhere they go when we were away from home.
Had to be Josh Windass as well, didn't it? But there you go. I won't talk to you anymore. Alan, thanks for coming on the show, and we'll speak soon.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, Alan, for coming on the podcast. Boys, if we don't do the business against Bolton, we've got to do the business against Barnsley, haven't we? They are a team bang out of form. They're a team who, at this moment in time, don't really seem to be playing well at all in the way that they play system-wise. It's not just results. They were sort of a free-scoring team that always conceded. They were a BTTS wizard team that you always bet on. And now it seems the goals have dried up and they're still conceding goals as well. Should we be pretty confident going into this game, shouldn't we, Freddie? Looking at Barnsley. The only thing I said, the wrinkle, is that potentially stylistically we're not going to sit behind the ball, which is what Barnsley are struggling to break down at this moment in time.
No, Pompey are going to play in the way that Barnsley would be happy with. And if their strongest players start, they've got an excellent front three in Phillips, McAtee and Cole. And there's so many goals there. And it seems like that's most of where their attacking chances come from. They've got some excellent wing-backs as well. Corey O'Keefe, Nicky Cadden. So there's the ability to put the cross in the box, even though Alan basically believes that the ball doesn't go above knee height with Barnsley. But there we are. I think if Bolton don't do the job, if Pompey don't do the job against Bolton, they'll be able to do the job against Barnsley, because Barnsley's defence has been shocking for quite a while, and they're just not the team, that side isn't scoring their way out of trouble anymore. So I'm more confident about Tuesday night than Saturday.
Fred, obviously you can't make the game on Saturday because of work, but you are coming Tuesday night. I'm going to give you a question here to put you in front of a bus potentially. Would you rather we went up Tuesday, or are you rather we wait until...
Don't do it, Freddie.
No, how selfish would I be if I said that? No,
I've seen people say it on social media.
I want Pompey to be champions on Saturday. If it means 100% done, fine. I will be, instead of running around town on a Tuesday night, I would much rather be sat at home with a bourbon and Coke, enjoying the moment in a somber manner. Not a somber manner. In a relaxed and happy manner, if Pompey get promoted on Saturday.
That somber manner, I can't believe I'm not going to go to Port Vale next season. Wistful.
Oh no, never going to the Pirelli Stadium ever again.
We can still go to Stoke, Andy. No, it's your favourite location, so don't worry about that.
Oh,
Don't worry about that. Stoke still on the cards. Boyd, I'm going to try and wrap this up now before my voice fails. I want to know your score prediction, please, Andy Mitchamore, for the game on Tuesday against Barnsley.
It's very difficult to do this because it's dependent on what happens Saturday, to be honest with you. I think if we win Saturday, there's a very good chance that the players, as well as us, are going to be so hungover that Tuesday night's a bit of a celebration party back at Fratton. And if that's the case, I can see us getting turned over and genuinely no one caring. If we need something out of the game, I think we'll win it. So let's say that my prediction for the Bolton game does come true and we drew 1-1. I think Pompey, we've got enough, I think, to win by two clear goals against Barnsley at home. They rise to the pressure this side so far this season in the big games. If they need to win to go up at home under lights, under a loud Fratton Park, I think they will. And I think it'll be a 2-0 Pompey win on Tuesday night.
Freddie Webb, do you agree with Andy Mitchamore?
I agree it'll be 3 points, but I think it'll be a 3-1 sorts of win. I'm going to go for a Abu Kamara brace, and I will go with Marlon Pack to score a free kick, and Devante Cole for Barnsley.
I'm also going to go 3-1. I can't bother to change my prediction just because Freddie said it. I'm going to go 3-1. I'm going to say a goal from Luca Connell for Barnsley, and I'm going to say we're going to get 3 goals ourselves. Bishop, Lane.
And Bishop.
Bish, bash, bosh. There we go.
Now, that's next week's title sorted. Bish.
Andy Mitchamore, it's been great having you on the podcast, mate.
Thanks, bro. Yeah, this time next week, it could be a very different pod. I don't want to say if we go up by next week, will we do X, Y, Z? It feels like tempting fate. But none of us ever drink while recording. If we've gone up by then, I am bloody well having a beer next week while we record.
Not alcohol-free, I hope.
No, I'm holding the alcohol-free Sauvignon Blanc here in front of the camera so you guys can see. This will be replaced by something that I shouldn't be ashamed to be drinking out of a wine glass next week if we've sealed promotion. I think I'll just be dizzy with happiness if that's the case. But yeah, lovely to chat to you both. Excited to see you this weekend, Hugh, for whatever happens. I'm assuming a fairly heavy night in Manchester and then survival on Sunday. Fred, I'm thoroughly excited to see you next Tuesday, my friend. It's been lovely to chat to you both. As always, have a lovely week, everyone. Have a safe trip up to Manchester if you're making the trip as well.
Thank you, Andy. I'm looking forward to it as well. And Freddie Webb, I'll be raising a glass to you in Manchester. Either way, we'll be thinking about you, but it's been great having you on the podcast.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you. And I'll be raising a glass to you after my shift, hopefully in triumph as the Blues do the business. Fingers crossed there. It's nearly there.
It's nearly there. And until next time, play out Pompey.
You have been listening to the PO Forecast for Pompey News Now, available on SoundCloud, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Follow PO Forecast and Pompey News Now on Twitter for more information.
And there is the full-time whistle!